Blog Talk Radio.
You miss me? I miss all of y'all. Hey. All y'all girls standing together like that. Keep hey. Shaking.
Family and guests, thank you so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Ashley Goodman, and this is the BYGP Locker Room Show. Tonight, I'll be speaking with Mr. Pat Rule. Coach Rule has 35 years of collegiate and NFL coaching experience. He is currently the offensive line coach for Seattle Seahawks since 2010 under Pete Carroll as the head coach. So let's get Coach on here. Coach, you with us? Coach, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Good, good, good. How are you doing tonight?
Well, I'm doing fabulous. I'm in Half Moon Bay getting ready to drive up to Napa to see my daughter, or I should say participate and give my daughter away. She's getting married July 18th.
Well, that is fantastic, and we spoke a little bit, you know, before the show got started. Napa is a fantastic area and a great place to have a wedding. So, I'm sure it'll be beautiful.
Oh, it's going to be great. And I, you know, between taxes and the wedding, I got about $1.50 left from my Super Bowl check.
Well, make sure that you're not saying that too much, because my parents have to pay for my wedding as well, you know,
oh,
when that time comes.
I gotcha.
So, well, I'm not getting married anytime soon, but yes, but keep that in mind. Don't say that too much.
I tried to spell out elope for my daughter on a Scrabble board, but she didn't get it, so.
That's funny. Well, let's get rolling. I'm very excited to have you on, and so grateful that you said yes to me to participate and to speak with me and to talk to our audience as well. So tell us a little bit about your background, you know, where you grew up, how football and everything got started.
Okay. Well, I was a son of a FBI agent. We moved around quite a bit, but we settled down in South Florida, and that's where I went to junior high and high school, and I was really a good swimmer. Loved the water, but it was a lonely sport, I got to tell you. I used to get in the pool and swim, and I finally told Dad, I said, hey, I think I'd rather play something else and do something else. And he said, well, why don't you go play football? And I thought, well, okay, I'll give that a shot. And so I went out for football at Coral Gables High School in Florida, and you know, proceeded to end up playing offensive line and played, it was All-City, All-State, and, you know, got a scholarship. And I ended up at the University of Miami, you know, which is right there in town. So, you know, did my career there. And then they asked me to come on as a graduate assistant. And I did. In our first game, the very first game that I participated in, as a coach, we beat Texas in 1973, and
wow.
they were the preseason number one team, and it's the game that started the Super Bowl jinx, because it seemed that everybody that the Sports Illustrated picked after that got beat somewhere in the season. So anyway,
interesting.
So where it all kind of started.
Oh, I'm sorry. So right. This is why you were a GA at Arkansas, you say?
No, this was while I was a full-time coach. Well, I was a graduate assistant at University of Miami first, and then
oh,
I became a full-time coach. Yeah, and then I became a full-time coach there. So my point of telling that story is I got addicted. I mean, I was like, I didn't think I really wanted to coach. I just was going to try to help out. And, you know, all of a sudden I got addicted to it. I was like, oh, this is the greatest thing in the world. We just beat the number one team. And so what happened was, you know, 2 years later, the staff gets fired. Actually, what was really funny is the head coach gets fired. And so I'm on the plane coming back from the Houston game with the other coaches, and that's when they fired him on the road. And I said to one of the other coaches, I said, hey, so what's Coach Selmer going to do? And I don't know. I just had to go find him. I said, I feel really bad for him. And they go, well, that's great. And I said, no, I'm glad that's not me. And they go, no, it is you too. I didn't know I was connected to the head coach like that.
Exactly. So even with all that, you still stuck strong and still went on the path to coaching.
Yeah,
so,
well, that's why I ran. I went to Arkansas with as a part-time coach, or they used to have graduate assistants and part-time coaches. But I went with, as a part-time coach with, which meant they could give me a little money, but. That's where I met Pete. Pete was there as well, and so we were both like graduate assistants together there, and developed. That's where our friendship developed, and it's been a long time friendship. So,
absolutely, yeah. And Coach, well, who else was there? I think there was a couple of you guys. Well, Pete Carroll was there at Arkansas. You were,
Kiffin. Monty Kiffin was there. Monty Kiffin was a well-known coach. Larry Bechtel was one of the top line coaches coaching the NFL for quite a while. John Mitchell coach who's at Pittsburgh. So
Coach Monty was there. Coach Monty was there as well.
Yes.
Yeah. So that definitely was a solid staff that Arkansas had. So then really. I mean, coming from swimming into football, it's very different. Did you know exactly the process of when, you got into high school football that you wanted to take it to the next level and play college ball, or was that
I tell you what, to be honest with you, actually what I was doing was it'd be like ordering something you've never eaten before. I was eating it, trying to figure out whether I liked it or not. And when I realized I was pretty good at it, I said, geez, I wonder if I could get a scholarship, And so that's kind of, all of a sudden where it started into. But, what's amazing is they had a lot more scholarships to give out back then. I hate to say how old I am, but when they gave out scholarships back then, there were colleges giving out 50, 60 scholarships. And then what they would do is, oddly enough, they would pare it down by making things really hard and difficult on the on the freshmen and sophomores. They'd make it really hard, and then the guys that stuck it out, it's kind of like the Army. You stuck it out, you made the team. So that was kind of what happened.
So was there a specific
play? It's a little different now,
like,
obviously.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, it's a big-time business, and high school football is getting, growing by the minute. So was there a specific play or a coach that, instilled in you, the hard work, the dedication? Did you have mentors growing up, like your dad or someone?
Yeah, my dad was my biggest mentor because he basically taught me about responsibility and being accountable for what you do and being somebody that can be counted on. But as a player, when I started playing, I think the very first thing when you play any team game is you never want to let your teammates down. So you always were trying to perform at a level that you felt that would gain you respect with your teammates. Now, I had a specific high school coach. I can tell you this: when I was, you know, when I was a 10th grader, I was going out, did not know what I was doing. I was standing in line, and guys would go in front of me, and they would take their turn. They would come back to the end of the line, and I would step back a step and let them get in front of me so that I never took my turn. I was like so shy. I was so shy. I was like, hey, I don't want to go up there. I don't really know what I'm doing. And all of a sudden, yeah. this coach said, Pat Rule, get up here, please. And he said, what are you doing back there? I said, and I got to tell you, actually, nothing fit right. My helmet didn't fit. My shoulder pads didn't fit. Nothing fit. I just felt like my self-image of myself was horrible. I thought, what am I doing out here? So he asked me to get down, and he said, I want you to, you know, like, go one-on-one with this guy. And so I got down. I was like, oh, I just don't want to, you know, I don't want these guys to think I'm not any good. So I just gave him my best effort. And I'm going to tell you what he did. The guy jumped up and down, the coach, he jumped up and down. And he said, my goodness, that's the best block we've seen here in 2 years. That's so great. You know, Pat, why aren't you up here all the time? And you want to know what? I promise you, it wasn't a very good block probably. But he wanted to instill some confidence in me. And the next day I came out, my helmet fit better. My shoulder pads fit better. And I was in the front of the line. So Lou Castle, that particular coach, just with his bit of positive encouragement, did more to map out the rest of my life than anybody I know.
That is great.
All of a sudden, I thought I was good. Yeah, I thought I was good. So I thought, once you start thinking you're good, I mean, it gets a little easier, you know.
Absolutely. That's half the battle right there is just having, absolutely. You know, the mindset that you're able to take it on. So that story is fantastic, Coach. I love that. What do you think, I mean, we see it from high school level all the way up to the professional level, you know, kids that are so talented and have so much potential, you know, on the field, they're so athletic, but they can't seem to, you know, find the solidness off the field, and it hurts them, you know, it hurts them. What do you see in advice for those young athletes and those athletes
in
general?
I think that, you know, Coach Carroll, we've all coached this, but I think Coach Carroll does a better job than anybody in the country of telling athletes, you know, we have basically three rules, okay, and we live by these rules. And so what the three rules are is, number one, always protect the team. And, you know, even like this year, you know, we had a couple guys the year before where, you know, had some issues with Adderall. They were, you know, which is a substance, a banned substance by the NFL, unless it's been prescribed. So some guys were using it, and they shouldn't have been. And so, you know, you had a couple of those, and then if you have a little behavior incident here or there, the point is Coach said, you know, you're Seahawks 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to learn to. And so the rule was to protect the team. Always protect the team. The word is always, always protect the team, which basically means you would do the same actually for your family. You would never do anything to embarrass your family or hurt your family. And you're kind of mindful of this. You have a consciousness towards it. Well, Coach Carroll's been able to instill that in the players to have a mindfulness about it. And so with that being said, we are hopefully better educating these guys about how off-field mistakes can really hurt you. You only have to make one, and it can damage your career forever. And so and it doesn't mean you have to live in a glass house. What it means is you have to use great judgment. You have to understand the situations you're in. You have to understand that an incident that you can get caught in can damage your career. You can lose a scholarship. You can lose your sponsors. You can lose your job as a pro football player. You can lose your scholarship as a college player. You can get kicked off the team as a high school player. I mean, so it's all about accountability and responsibility, you know, and so that's the rule number one. Rule number two is no whining, no complaining, no excuses. So, yeah, this is the way we talk. You know, we talk in such a way that we are very positive. We don't make excuses about, you know, why we didn't get something done. We just get it done, and we find the solution and work at it. But what it does is it creates such a positive atmosphere, and it's really funny. Once the players learn it, you know, it's really kind of cool because they'll go, oh, you know, some guy, he'll be complaining about something in food, or he'll be complaining about practice or something that he just rubbed him the wrong way. And
yeah.
Other players will go, rule number two violator. They'll tell him, you're a rule number two violator. So, you know, what it does is gets us all talking more in a positive fashion, and we're more apt to look for solutions to problems rather than complain or make excuses about them.
Exactly.
And the third thing was be early, and this is kind of cool too, because be early just, you know, says a little bit about who you are. It says that you want to learn, that you want to participate, that you want to be a part of it. And so those are three really simple rules that I think you can have them for your family, you can have them for your team, you can have them for whatever. But the point is that it really teaches you about your responsibility and accountability towards your family or your team, the way you should talk, and how you should talk, because we all know that, you know, the more positive individuals are, they draw more positive things to them. And so,
yes.
You know, that's a good rule. And then the third rule would be early is just kind of showing your enthusiasm to be a part of it. And I I've been a coach a long time, and I've been around guys who had 20 rules, you know. Well, we got three, and those are the three easiest rules ever, and they all make sense, you know. So.
Yeah, no, and all of those three rules, like you said, you can put it on and off the field. And
right, exactly.
And with an athlete or just with an individual, you're held to a certain standard. You're held to a certain, responsibility. And so those rules are spot on to make
right.
decent judgments and to, you know, make those a part of your life, you know, not just on
right.
the field.
Well, I think that's the biggest thing is to make it part of the culture.
Exactly.
We have a guy, we have a guy on our staff named Sherman Smith. He said something very interesting a couple of years ago, and I've never forgot it. I use it all the time. And it really talks about players. Sometimes they get the feeling, you know, that they are invincible because of media, and they can, you know, they can treat people poorly. They can do whatever they want. But, you know, Sherman Smith has told our team, and he's told a lot of the coaches, this specific thing, which I think is pretty cool, is that the power of respect is to never disrespect. So we try to tell
wow.
them, you know, the power of respect is to never disrespect. So think about that when you're dealing with everybody that you talk to, whether you're dealing with the guy that serves you the food, whether you're dealing with a coach, whether you're dealing with your wife, whether you're dealing with a girlfriend or whatever, is to never disrespect them. And if you do that, then, you know, you're always going to keep things at a very positive oriented level, you know. So anyway, I thought that was a cool thing that he brought up a couple of years ago. I've never forgot it.
Yeah, that's going to stick with me, Coach. That's definitely solid on that, and that will definitely be something that I repeat many times, because that is very important. And just it's simple, but it's right to the point, it will always stick with you on that. So that is fantastic. Did you feel in high school that you and your family, you know, were set up, that you were geared for that recruiting process, that you understood what was coming when you were signing your name on that dotted line? And what
Not
do you
at
think?
All. Not at all.
Okay. Okay.
Not at all. I think we were a little bit blinded. I think the kids, or young men are more, and families are more in tune today, and that's because of the internet and, you know, because there are services out there, you know, that help people with, you know, getting their, sometimes their film out, helping them put things together so that they're, so they do get looked at. So I think that there's just more. It was kind of just left up to a coach popping into your house before, but now you actually have people advertising you to a certain degree. They're saying, hey, you need to go look at this young man at, you know, at McKinney High School, or that guy at Coral Gables High School, and you know, it's, I think that's, it's gotten better. I think the parents just probably, and the young men, need to be educated on the fact that these college recruiters are not just recruiting you; they're recruiting probably. Let's say they've got 18 kids that they want to try to get signed. Well, they're probably recruiting 65. So, you know, when they're recruiting 65, so you know, the athlete and the parents have to understand that, you know, yes, he's one of these guys, and you know, sometimes they think they can stall around and wait, and then they lose their scholarship. Sometimes, you know, sometimes they can if they're just that good. But I've seen it work both ways. You know, like you know, where kids have lost scholarships because they didn't realize they're recruiting all these other guys. You know, and so you know, and one of them says yes. You know, they start, well, okay, we don't need any more tackles. Okay, we don't need any more linebackers. You know, so
exactly. Exactly. You know, so. What would you tell parents? I mean, parents, and I've worked with this just because my background of being a strength conditioning coach and working with young athletes, as well as, you know, dealing with parents and them asking me questions. But what would you tell parents about who are wanting to, you know, help their son be a solid for college, about the extra training, you know, hiring coaches for specific drills and everything of that nature? Do you think there's too much? Do you think that you can go overboard with that?
Well, I do think you can go overboard. But let's remember this. Let's remember that, you know, there's too many, you know, fathers out there that are almost like trying to manage their kid with how he's going to work out, what he's going to do, and also, and I don't see that sometimes as very healthy. I think that you know one of the best intelligences that we can have as human beings is imagination, and imagination and creativity comes from a little more freedom than too much restriction. So what I want to tell parents is yes, send them to a camp, but don't go stand there and watch them at camp. Don't go, you know, hey, tell him, hey, I want you to do this on your own. Go do it. Now, I understand he might want to go out and watch football practice, which is fine. But, you know, there are a few things that you need to let the young man do so that he can grow on his own, so that he can feel, you know, that he's taking control of his own life and that he's getting a self-image that he can be proud of. And oftentimes I've seen kids that, you know, they are pretty good athletes in this, but everything revolves around what dad wants and when dad, you know, says, you know, he should do and everything. And I really think that, you know, I'm going to say something about Coach Carroll, you know, in this relationship here is our athletes have fun practicing.
Mm-hmm.
I think parents need to make sure that they're not making this whole process a task. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
do not make it a task, because you make it a task, you're going to start to turn your son off to stuff, and what you want him to do is enjoy what he's doing and love what he's doing. So figure out ways to like Lou Castle did me, be real proud of him. When he does something great, you know, hey, just pat him on the back and say, I'm so impressed with what you're doing. Because this is what helps him grow. You know, to be criticizing him all the time, doesn't really help them grow as much as you think. Yes, it can make them get grittier and get a little tougher sometimes, but I don't think the value of that is as great as the positive words by parents and to let them go a little bit on their own. Don't be the constant monitor of everything, you know. So that's my best advice. And as far as getting a position coach, if you get the right guy, I think that can be helpful because, like a former, offensive lineman who played in pro football or a former coach who's, say I'm retiring or maybe the high school coach who's, who everybody says, hey, this guy really knows what he's doing. To get him to work a little extra with him is absolutely phenomenal. That's phenomenal stuff. As long as it's not done in a manner that turns him off to what he's doing. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And that is very important. You have to have some balance of making it enjoyable, because then it's just going to feel, like you said, a task, and it's, by the time you're a junior in high school, it's going to feel like you've been working for, an incredibly long hours, and you're only 16, 17 years old. So, see what you're saying. Now, if you did have, I know you have a daughter, but if you had a son, what camps do you, in your opinion, would you want your son think that solidness, these camps would be fantastic for your son?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I think if I had a son, I would want him to go experience one or two camps. If I, obviously, sometimes he's, kind of almost become not affordable because they're so, some of them get expensive. But the fact of the matter is that you'd like him to go to a camp where he's going to get looked at by Division I players or Division I coaches, and another camp where he would be maybe get looked at by Division I AA and two and three, whatever. Because what you're trying to do is to expand him and see, where the evaluators see him. Do they see him as a Division I player? Do they, and normally there's a coach that can kind of be straightforward and honest. I heard this saying a long time ago from a high school coach. He had this sign by his desk. He said, "If I tell you the truth, will you still be my friend?" And I said to him, "Wow." So that's when a second team DB comes into your office and says, "I should be playing in front of that safety because I'm a better safety." And he goes, "No, coach, you don't got it. That's not it at all." I said, "What is it?" And he goes, "That's specifically for the parents." And he said, the kids always know, where they're at and what they need to do to get better. It's the parents that sometimes have real unrealistic expectations. They think their kid's a Division I player and he's not quite there, And so he said, I have to, that's science for the parents. If I tell you the truth, will you still be my friend? And what he's basically saying is, I'll tell you exactly where I think he's at. But here's what I caution everybody. Is I told Ryan Sandberg, who was this goes back in baseball, but he was a tremendous baseball player and a great quarterback, out of Spokane. And I told him, I said, "Well, you're a much better football player than you are a baseball player." Well, he went into pro baseball, made National League Rookie of the Year, and was a great player and a Hall of Famer. So I'm sitting here going, sometimes coaches, we all think we can evaluate really well. We think we know what we tell them. But the fact is I could tell a guy, "I don't think you're good enough to play Division I," and 2 years later, he's playing Division I because there's no measure for a guy's will. For example, a classic example is Michael Jordan's a sophomore in high school. Couldn't make his basketball team.
I know. He got cut his sophomore year.
So, all of a sudden, as a junior, he's what he is. And as a senior, everybody in the world is saying, "We got to get this guy." And so the point is that there's no, what's in the heart, What lies in front of you, what lies behind you is not so important as what lies inside of you. And what we can't, a lot of times we have a hard time measuring that. We have a hard time measuring, you know, what is in that guy's heart and how much competitiveness he has. Because, you know, we might say, well, you know, he's not good enough. But then a year later, he's more than good enough, you know. So,
exactly.
You know,
Now you saying that, just, I mean, and I've heard Pete Carroll talk, and it sounds, I mean, I can definitely tell that you guys have spent many years together, but
yeah.
I definitely want to say, with you saying that, is that kind of like the environment that you guys instill with Seattle? Of, it's kind of feeling like the underdog, that chip on the shoulder type, you know, feeling of,
yeah,
of really having that mentality of always feeling like you have to prove something. Is that kind of,
well,
the environment within that?
I think you're hitting it right on the nail on the head there. But what I really want to say is that we want athletes to show who they are. Inside everybody lies a tiger. You know, a guy that wants to be the top dog. He wants to be the very best. It's letting that tiger come out. And so, you know, what we do is we encourage them to show us who you are. And, you know, how do you want us to see you? You know what I mean? How do you want other people to see you? You know, you want us, you want them to see you as a great competitor? Is that important to you? Well, if it is, then show it to us, you know. And I think the great players of today, it isn't about the money to them. It's about winning the individual battle. It's about showing everybody who they are, you know. Mm-hmm. And inside of every one of us, there's a bright star that wants to come out, and it's a matter of those young men letting it come out, or young girls, you know, competing in anything. It is about letting your competitiveness come out to show who you are. Because, you know, do you want to win? We all want to win. But will you let that competitiveness come out? Will you let it come out and show everybody? When I was with the New York Giants, a classic was I had Michael Strahan was, lined up at right defensive end, and I put the kid named David Deal, who was a rookie, over left side, and he beat Michael Strahan on the last pass rush of the day. And I raised David Deal's hand just like Luke Castle raised mine, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I said, that's great. I said, we got a new champion on the New York Giants football team. Okay. Michael Strahan almost went berserk. He said, you know what, Pat? I'm going old school on you guys tomorrow. We're not going to have any more of that. And I mean, he didn't care about what his salary was. He wanted to be king of the mountain, and so he was showing us basically who he was. And we went to the next drill. Coach Coughlin says to me, he said, why is he yelling at you? I said, Coach, he's mad because I raised David Deal's hand. I said, he was the champion. he said, that's pretty funny. I said, well, it's really kind of, tells you a little bit about Michael Strahan, about the kind of
competitor.
So, and I think that's in all these kids. It's in all of them. It's a matter of it coming out. You know, I think everybody has it, but I think it's a matter of coming out. That's all.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I totally agree with you on that. And I think you're right about, you know, there's so much stuff going on with an individual on and off the field, but having the positiveness, you know, coming from a coach or coming from a teammate or, you know, just the environment, I think that definitely speaks well. And it just gives yourself a boost to feel like you're able to accomplish what you're trying to do. And so
right.
I definitely think the positiveness is, you know, a great way to handle it. And just, you know, I definitely can see where you and Coach Carroll have definitely, you know, gotten that down within Seattle and, you know, back in at SC when you guys were there. So that totally makes sense.
Well, it's, you know, I think coaching if I may, coaching is it's about selling the players on a journey of
exactly.
greatness. And a lot of coaches will say, well, why are you selling that guy? He's not good enough to make it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what?
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather be the guy selling a guy that maybe not good enough to make it to see how far he can go rather
yeah.
than to say you're not good enough. And, you know, they say, well, you're not being realistic. Well, I believe I am being realistic because
mm-hmm.
basically what I'm saying is I don't set a bar for them. They set it.
Yeah.
I will never
yeah.
set a bar for them. I will not limit what they can do anymore. I try to limit to Ryan Sandberg by saying what? Hey, you're not good enough to play baseball. You're a better football player. Well, he proved me wrong. I realized right then, is you know what? Why would I ever, as a coach, set a limit on any player? Why wouldn't I tell him, hey, you know, you can be this, you can be that. I believe in you totally. And see if I can't help him get there. And you know what? If
mm-hmm.
we don't get there together, if we fail together, I promise you the journey was worth it. The journey to find out was much greater than to accept the fact that, you know, or to deny him the opportunity to take the trip. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't believe it's, you know, BSing a player. I believe it's basically saying, hey, you have a dream, I got a dream. Let's see if we can make it come true, which I think is how you need to do it, you know, to be successful.
Yes, yes. So then let me ask you this. We're talking about positiveness and we're talking about the, you know, coaching and just, you know, feeling good. What is your opinion about NCAA and how they've, you know, grown to a huge amount? And do you feel that they're doing everything in their power to really, you know, find and help these athletes find success, you know, on and off the field, just as their transitioning period, they enter college? What do you, you know, what's your opinion on that?
Well, here's my opinion. You know, it's and, I'm going to be very blunt about it because it's,
mm-hmm.
it's like, you know, oftentimes you see these charities that, okay, they only have to give five for, you know, I give a dollar, they only got to give a nickel to call themselves a legal charity. This is why I get mad at the NCAA. You know, they make millions, if not billions of dollars on these guys. You know what? They should be providing a little more incentive for them as far as, and I'm not talking about paying them. You know, I'm
mm-hmm.
talking about, you know, rewarding them for academics. In other words, hey, if you're able to maintain a 3.5 GPA, then we will grant you a graduate school scholarship, you know, if you're able to, you know, In other words, not we know you're an athlete. We know you're giving your time, but we know what we'd like to do. We'd like to put the emphasis really where it needs to be. You need to be patted on the back for making good grades. You need to be patted on the back for excelling in the classroom. So if you can make that 3.0, then we'll be willing to, you know, kick $1,500 towards a, you know, postgraduate scholarship because not everybody's going to play pro football. And my point
is
that the NFL should be doing more stuff like that. They should be developed because you know what? These guys are working two jobs. I don't
mm-hmm.
care what anybody says. They are working two jobs. They're representing their school. They're working out. They're training. They're doing all this stuff, and they're trying to do their studies. Well, you know what? Too many people are patting them on the back all the time for scoring the touchdown or making the great block or doing this. There needs to be a little few more pat on the backs for getting that A in English and that, you know, that B in philosophy. That there needs to be more of that going on because we want them to be successful people. And if we're going to invest in them, then let's reward them on that side. And my point is that they're making all this money on, I'm not really for paying them.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you give them a scholarship, I think that's, you know,
that's
almost
enough.
I think there should be incentives. You are tied into the university. Why wouldn't you be giving them some kind of incentive to become something greater in the classroom? You know,
mm-hmm.
I just, you know, we want them to do it themselves, but this might motivate guys to, you know what, hey, I'd like an extra $1,500 to put towards grad school or to put, you know, to take another class. It might help me be more successful or whatever. But how do I do that? Well, it says if I can maintain a 3.0 through school, I can get there. Or if I maintain, a, you know, 3.2, whatever it is, whatever they feel like is a, you know, hey, something that is exceptional while you're playing football, that's what they should do. Have these guys, Reese, just like I just said, hey, why can't you be good at both? You certainly can, but there's not enough emphasis by the NCAA, in my opinion. You know, I think the NCAA is, you know, they're caught up in their own power sometimes. They ask these guys to sign over their likeness when they sign scholarships. Well, that, to me, that's like calling yourself an agent.
I totally agree on that.
That's wrong. And, you know, 15, 20 years ago, they were advertising, they were selling advertisements to beer commercials for the NCAA championship games. That was like, seriously, these guys are, you know, don't ever forget this. They're a corporation. It's all about money to them. So you have
to badger them.
Yeah, so you have to badger them into doing the right things. You have to badger them into making, you know, here's a good phrase for you. Hey, don't make decisions right. Make the right decision. You know, they oftentimes will just try to make decisions right by saying this is the way it should be, when it's not the right decision.
Yeah.
The right decision is to help the athletes be the very best they can be, and if they're going to do two jobs, I'm not for paying them. I'm for offering them an incentive to do better academically, because only a very few selected guys are going to play pro football. It's the number of all the guys that play college athletics, it's not very big, believe me.
Yeah, no, and I totally 100%, I think you're spot on making the academic side of things, you know, bigger. Well, now in 2016, they're, you know, changing GPAs to 3.2 that athletes are needing to have. So I definitely agree with you to kind of boost the academic side. Do you think that college athletes are using, you know, their college, you know, they're being an athlete, do you think they're using that platform enough to network, to make the connections once football is done? Because like you say, there's a very small amount of those guys that make it to the next level. And even when you make it to the next level, there's no guarantee on how long you're there for.
That's correct. And, you know, I think just in pro football, we have a problem in pro football. The guys get money very fast. They don't know how to treat it. They don't respect it well enough, and they trust too many people with it. And therefore, a lot of times, a lot of them end up broke. And you know, they're in pro football, and they make, let's say they make $6 million in 4 years. Okay, and then 5 years later, they're broke. Well, how's that possible? How is that possible? Well, they live way beyond their means, and they got too many people who they're trusting that are saying do this and do that. And, you know, the NFL is working at it hard to try to educate them more on managing their money and who to trust and you know, what to do to make sure that you can ensure trust. You know, a guy asked me the other day, he said, what would you do? I said, I would have an agent. And then I'd have an auditor who audited my agent, and then an auditor who audited my auditor. And I said, it's only going to cost me an extra couple grand, but at least I would know where every penny of mine is, you know.
Exactly. So, that is funny. Now, I'm gonna say that to a few players. I'm gonna definitely repeat that. That's definitely a good one right there. Well, okay, I cannot get you off the phone without asking. You know, I have you on the phone, which I'm thrilled. I'm excited. I have to ask you, how was your you know, experience? Tell us that moment. You're at the Super Bowl. You know, you're with this team. You're with Coach Carroll. What is that moment like? And then, you know, to win the ultimate prize. How was that at that moment?
Well, it's interesting you ask that, Ashley, because I think that what I think that we all went through this as coaches. You know, we, and maybe as players as well, we treat every game as like it's the most important game we'll play. So you, if you do that, and you try to emulate that every time you go out, what happens is games just become another game. You know, it's like a phrase we have, what's next? You know, it's a what's next attitude. Hey, it's what's our next achievement? You know, we're really, you know, it's not so much about beating the other guys. How much can we achieve? You know what I'm saying? That's, you know, so consequently, we don't, you know, when we got into that big game like that, nobody really thought about it as a big game. They said, oh, it's a chance for us to play the Broncos. Cool, let's go play the Broncos. You know what I mean? It was not about the Super Bowl. Now, after, you know, once the game was over and you kind of realized, oh, it's a little bit bigger in magnitude than the regular other games we played.
Yeah.
You know, all the confetti's coming down and everybody's so elated. But, you know, we all said, you know, that there was no greater experience for that evening, the post game party, you know, with Macklemore and Paul Allen, who was up there playing the guitar too. So everything was like almost surreal to a certain point. Then we go home,
yeah,
and that was huge parade, which is like you can't even believe it. It was so many people, and they all had Seahawk gear on, and you were like going, oh my God, this is just like a. So you're in some kind of a dream world, and so they're just cheering you and all this stuff. Well, when it was all kind of said and done, you know, we knew we were getting our rings in June and all that stuff, but we were thinking to ourselves, is there more than that? And so Bill Russell had talked to Pete, you know, and Bill Russell's like the winningest team player ever. He's won 13 world championships, 2 national championships, so nobody's won more championship to this guy. He basically said something I thought was so significant. He said the biggest thrill he had was not winning that particular game or the post game stuff. He said the biggest thrill he had was standing in the tunnel the next year and they announced him as, and now you're world champion Boston Celtics.
Wow.
He said that put a chill through him, and he said that made him realize that he had to defend now. And it made him realize the importance of what he did. It was like, okay, they've now declared you the top dog. Now you got to defend. And so he basically told Pete, he said, that's when I felt the most fulfilled from it and from winning. And I think that's what's going to happen to us too. I think we will feel the most fulfilled when we start to embark on this season and, you know, they announce us as the world champions. I think that's going to be very cool.
Well, absolutely. And I know you're gearing up. You're going to be extremely busy, but I will be thinking of that moment exactly what you just said. And I will be thinking in my head, he's feeling the exact moment that he just told me. So
exactly.
That is very cool. That's very cool. Coach, I want to thank you so much for coming on and talking with me. Yeah, it was a blast, and by all means, I'm definitely coming to Seattle, and we're going to do, you know, on-air interviews with you and all of that when you have the time. So I definitely will want to be contacting you again.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Okay. And I'll speak with you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye. Guys, we hope you got a lot out of listening to Coach Rhule and the input he gave to help your game and off the, you know, on and off the field. You have some great things coming about with GYP. Oh my goodness, I'm so excited. BYGP right now. So please check us out at www.beforeyougopro.com. Guys, if you also have not checked out our book, please do. That is also very, very knowledgeable on just the fact of this journey and for both parents and coaches and athletes. Just check that out. It'll give you some insight on this whole process. On Thursday, tune in at 6:30 PT. We will be speaking with Michael Clayton, who was a huge recruit coming out of high school and was drafted in 2004 in the first round at pick number 15. We'll be talking with him about his book that is also out. So you definitely do not want to miss this Thursday at 6:30. Guys, this is Ashley Goodman signing off with BYGP and the rest of the BYGP team. Before anything else, preparation is key to success. Have a good night, guys.